everybody.
Hello. We're back again. After a more than brief time spent away.
I'm Ellie Knopf.
I'm Hannah Scambalone, still.
And this is Not Another New Girl podcast. Season one finale.
It is the season one finale. It's an extravaganza today. We should have like a sound cue or something here. Like confetti to match the hand motions we just did that none of you can see.
All right, listeners, just so you know, today is no notes, just vibes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hannah, drinks in hand, talking about season one of New Girl, so get ready for crazy.
We have little to no content planned for the next indiscriminate amount of time, so this should be just as much fun for you guys as it's about to be for us.
Well, what's the Micah story?
Oh, I don't remember what I was talking about, but I mentioned something that you and I had like brought up recently on a podcast. I think it was the Jungle Juice, the Marion Jungle Juice.
Oh.
You can bleep the street name.
the jungle juice.
But I remember telling him this, and I was like, oh yeah, I like talked about it on the podcast with Ellie, and he was like, oh yeah, I gotta be honest, I've only heard the first two episodes. And I was like, oh, I know, because we did a whole entire introduction calling you guys out on losing our March Madness bracket, and not one of you.
You're right. I didn't even think about that. That not a single one of them mentioned
not
it.
Not one of them made mention. So of course I'm. So I was like, I know. I know you haven't been listening. You didn't even get to the episode that had the better sound quality.
Bitch.
So I just wanted to call out Micah publicly for being one of our best friends and worst subscribers.
He'll never hear this.
He'll never hear this.
Stupid. Bitch.
So what'd you think of this finale?
I have a lot of notes. I am just gotta say, spoilers from here on out, I'm so glad that he didn't stay with Caroline. Oh my god. If he had, I, like, narratively, just, like, from somebody who's watched a lot of sitcoms, if he had stayed with her, like, through the season break, it would have taken so long for them to break up. It would have just, he would have dated Caroline, like, three quarters of the way through season two if they hadn't broke up at this season split. It would have been so annoying. I'm so glad. Again, all love to Mary Elizabeth Ellis, but I'm so glad they decided to get rid of that relationship right here.
Right here. Do you think it'll be back?
Oh, God. Well, I, you know, if you'd asked me a couple weeks ago, I would have said no, but after the shocking twists that took place in the last couple weeks, I can't say for sure. I hope not. I hope not. That's my take.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't give anything away, but... Oh, I forgot that my opening question that I wanted to ask for this, which I'm just gonna ask now, is... Have you ever read White Fang?
Yes! It's one of my mom's favorite books. She read it... Yeah, she's read it to me multiple times. And I've read it myself. But White Fang and Call of the Wild. Well, long story short, I was an English tutor for a while when I was in high school. And so I would always use Jack London as an example of American naturalism, like, as my, like, example. Because White Fang was so easy for kids to read, so. Because it's just about a dog that wants to be free. No, Call of the Wild's about the dog that wants to be free. White Fang's about the dog that gets domesticated. The wolf that gets domesticated. Both books are great. Both excellent encapsulations of the Alaskan Yukon. It's funny that Schmidt is devoted to White Fang because it's totally in character. Have you ever read it? Have you ever read
No, I've never read White Fang and I've never read Call of the Wild.
Dude, you would read. I mean, either of those books, you'd read them in a day. Like, they're not that long. They're like. I don't know, like 1800s adventure novels, you know, like kind of thing, but like with more literary value. Sorry, any Jack London devotees that might be listening to this.
But. All three of our listeners are like, oh. I'm a Jack London.
Hannah,
excuse me. Someone out there, like there is a person out there. They probably don't listen to this podcast, but their favorite movie is the Harrison Ford with the CGI dog, Call of the Wild.
Oh, Call of the Wild, yeah. Do you know the plots of the books?
I literally don't. I only know about White Fang from this episode of New Girl.
So, Jack London was a prospector back at the turn of the century in Alaska in the Yukon Territory. So, I believe White Fang was written first, but don't quote me on that. White Fang is this story, and it's all written through, like, the dog's perspective, which was, like, a really original narrative device at the time, but it was written from the wolf's perspective. It's about this wolf that gets, like, injured and eventually comes to form a bond with this human prospector, and at the end of the book, the guy adopts the dog. And then Call the Wild is pretty much the exact opposite. It's this pet dog that gets abducted from San Francisco. And apparently this was something that used to happen a lot back in the day, like, because they needed so much, like, canine labor in the Yukon to, like, pull sleds and stuff, because there was such a gold rush up there. So people would just, like, kidnap people's pet dogs if they were, like, big dogs. So Call the Wild's about this book about this dog that about named Buck that gets kidnapped, and he's got to go through all this whole rigmarole. He's like a mining dog for a minute, he's a sled dog for a minute, he's got to be a dog fighting ring for a minute, but then he answers the call of the wild and joins the wolf pack. And the very last chapter is about the new wolf pack that's running through, that's got splotches of white and brown, and you can see that he's answered the call and found his true freedom in the Alaskan wilderness. They're both great books for different reasons, but White Fang was like one of my mom's favorite books, so she read that to me like 3 times when I was a kid.
Oh my gosh, I got like strangely emotional being like, oh, he became one of them and they became him.
He like writes it from the dog's point of view, so it's so simple, and like the description of landscapes and everything are just so, it's very stirring. It's like there's a reason it's stuck around for this long.
Makes me want to read it.
Even in Harrison Ford CGI form.
I keep thinking about those memes where it's like the Doge cat or the Doge dog. And it's, like, one of them is the dog being, like, and the other one is the dog with, like, a ripped body. And it's, like, dogs in whatever year, and it's, like, we are wolves, we hunt, and all this stuff. And then it's, like, please pet me. I want my food.
My favorite one is where it's about the cats, and it's, the street cats are, like, I eat snakes and mice for breakfast. And then the house cats are, like, I ate dry crunchies too fast, and so I threw up.
Yesterday, Aaron and I were looking at puppies that we can adopt, and I found this puppy named Lil Thor on Pet Finder, who is so cute. He was an American bully.
Oh, no.
And his name was Lil Thor, and there was a video of him at the dog park. And I said, I need him.
I love bulldogs. Especially like the big English bulldogs with like the huge drooling maw. Like there's something about those little buggers that I love.
I do too. I love an ugly dog. Like I want to have a bulldog that's just like slobbering all over me, and I'm like, come here, wrinkly boy.
I want his tiny little biceps to just pan across the room. Me and Kyle were looking last night at other cats because we're trying to get Katara a friend, because I think he's lonely. Mm-hmm. I think he's sad being by himself, and even though he beat the shit out of Bean when we were fostering him, I think a bigger playmate would be good for him, so we're trying to find him a friend in the city. There's this little gray cat that lives outside our building that I keep trying to catch, but I don't think that's going to be successful.
I think you can do it. I believe in you.
We made eye contact once. I was like, hey, I could give you a life in this building. And she, like, ran into the street.
She's living the reality of Cats, the musical.
I can't tame her. Who am I to seduce her from that life?
Right. I mean. She's just a feral cat living out in the street, dancing.
I can't disturb the equilibrium out there. Oh, man. I guess we should start talking about the finale at some point.
Yeah, so what did you find the most surprising to end this season?
I don't know if I necessarily found this surprising, but just because of how long it's been, you know, we're thinking it's been like a week in between episodes, more or less, besides that break in the middle there where Nick started dating Julia. So it's been like a year, right?
Yeah.
Just the bond that's developed between all of them, like in the desert and everything, with like Jess pretending to lose her keys and just, you know, even dumb things like Winston being afraid of the dark and everything. Just like it seemed like that group of people had always been there and was always doing that and like had always been hanging out. And like little pockets of them had known each other for years. Like Jess and Cece are childhood friends, and, you know, Nick and Schmidt are childhood friends or whatever. Nick and Winston are childhood friends. Schmidt's later on. But you got the idea of them all hanging out in the desert, and this was definitely the point of the episode, but like that they all like kind of belong together out there. And, you know, at the end of the first season of this show, there's still six more seasons to go. I was surprised that we've gotten here already. I'm excited to see how these relationships continue to develop.
Yeah, well, I think that's why Nick decides to stay. It's just like, I don't know, like, there's something about, like, I recently went on a camping trip with my friends, so, like, fresh in the brain, that, like, feeling of, like, it's, the sun is setting and you're just, like, sitting around in a circle drinking beers with your friends and, like, hanging out, and there's nothing to do, you're just in the wilderness, and you're just like, oh yeah, this is living. That, I think, just reminded him that his relationship with Caroline is so absent of that warmth that comes from just, like, a genuine connection where you don't have to try. Like, you can just sit there and drink a beer and you're still having a good time, as opposed to, like, they talk about it on the show, but also, like, we've talked about it on our podcast, like, the way that he feels like he has to be something else for Caroline. Like, it's not just enough to be a bartender and, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah. I mean, it's kind of good that it happens, because it makes him realize that he's making a mistake, and he belongs in the loft with his buddies.
Mike and I were talking the other day, and I said that the reason that I love our group of friends so much, our ever-changing, expanding group of friends so much, is that they're a group of people who push but never shove. You know, I always feel like our friends are pushing me to be a better artist, better person, but they're never trying to make me into something that I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that's, at least in my 24 years, is pretty rare to encounter in people, and is kind of a goal. One of the main goals of life, right, is just to be understood by people. And so, I think Nick realized, you know, maybe not in those specific terms, but what he would be giving up if he chose to leave in that way. Not necessarily saying that you have to live together to have that kind of connection, but if he had, like, left for that relationship, like, he would have lost that connection, and I think he definitely recognized that.
Yeah. And, of course, like, they don't all have to live together to have that connection, but the loft is truly what draws them together, at least in the show, because, like, in the world of a sitcom, it's all about, like, the space that they share, and they wouldn't have met each other if it weren't for that, and if it weren't for, like, needing certain roommates and, like, just certain things working out at a certain time, that it's almost like the place is also the friendship in this instance.
It's the inciting incident. it's something that they can, like, always come back to and be like, oh, here's, like, why we're all in this situation. It's, at the very bare minimum, it's because we all live here. We're all in this common, you know, fighting this common battle, at least specifically in living in this apartment, you know?
Yeah. I like that the landlord comes in for that one split second.
I wrote that down. He came back and he had the broom. He had the sharpened broom.
It was entirely whittled. I was like, yes.
What vampire was he hunting with that stake?
All of them. He was gonna go up north to where I live and hunt some vampires in the woods up here.
I was gonna say something and then I forgot.
It's okay. We're just vibing. No outline, just vibes.
It's great. No outline, just vibes. I haven't showed Ellie my apartment in New York yet. Part of me almost wants to wait for you to get here, but also I can't wait.
Yeah, that's too long.
I gotta show you how big my plants have gotten. Hey! Sorry, hold on. Guitar is fucking something up. He's never heard fireworks before.
Oh.
A lot of fireworks go off in our neighborhood, and he's just, like, really mystified. the sound. Just as almost as mystified as he is by the sound of children's voices.
Same, Katara. Listeners, I'm currently teaching theater to fourth and fifth graders.
Yes.
As my full-time job, and oh boy.
Ellie talked a big talk a couple episodes ago about never having directed children's theater, and now here she is.
And now here I am.
In the literal thick of it. That is like the most intense age to teach children's theater, I feel like, is fourth and fifth grade.
Yeah, it's trial by fire. I've never been a teacher before. I've never worked with kids. They just tossed me in the ring and I was like, all right, kids, let's, let's make some devised theater.
Trying to keep weapons away from the kids.
Yeah, because it's Portland, so the whole training is, like, we're sensitive, and, like, we care about our feelings, and, like, we meditate instead of punishing people. And then I get to class, and the kids are like, what if I stab this person, and then they throw a bomb in my mouth, and I explode? And then at the end of the day, we're supposed to, like, go around the circle, and everyone, like, says something that, like, they learned that they loved, or, like, something that they did today that they thought was fun, or something they saw their friend do that was really good. And, like, every day at least three kids are like, I liked in the scene that we did when I died.
Okay, but if I had been a kid in a fourth grade theater camp, that's what I would have said
to him. Oh, yeah. Like, they're great. They're just wonderful.
They're just playing. Like,
right. It's been 3 days, and we've already made 7 mini plays. So all I'm saying is I'm so proud of them and I love them. They're incredible, but it is trial by fire.
Honestly, have them give me a copy of the Poison Pizza script. I'll see what I can do with it.
There's no script, just vibes. No script, just vibes. Just like this podcast.
Just like this episode. The tagline for this episode can be, I hope you're into feminist rants, because that's kind of my thing.
Yes! Oh, I love that she, first of all, finally says that, because that's an iconic line from this, but I also love that guy is just, they just leave him alone in the loft for however long they're not there. And then when Nick moves back in, he's just chilling on the couch.
God. They just kick him out with some creature in a box. Kyle watched this with me yesterday when I was preparing for this, and he goes, why is Jess upset that a male her is moving into the apartment complex? I was like, I think Neil's just a weirdo.
Well, I honestly, like, I was thinking about it, and I know that we've talked about this before, because that struck me too, that it's like he's singing, and he's like, I don't know, just has a lot of weird shit, and I know that we've talked before about the ways that Jess is changed by the boys and the way that the the boys are changed by Jess. I guess the guys. The boys are our friends.
They are.
But I really interpreted it as that like, she came in as that person, but now is a little bit more like, no, actually, I do like to, like, read a book sometimes, and, like, someone who's like this is a little bit too much for me.
My favorite quote of Neil's was, I had the unique experience of having to let myself go. I didn't take it well.
Oof.
Oh, man.
I enjoyed that it was, like, he's also going through a breakup. Like, that's what brings everyone to the loft. That was kind of a fun line.
Frankly, after all of the trouble of getting an apartment in a big city and moving with a significant other, I mean, the only way I'd be looking for a roommate from here on out is in the event of a super ugly breakup. Like, you could pry my cold, dead body from this apartment.
Fair enough. I feel the exact opposite. Like, the people that I'm gonna move in with, I'm like, I'm living with these people forever, because if I, like, have a significant other, and then I'm like, I want to move in with this person, it's like, I'm gonna have to try to find a new apartment, and that's not okay. I'm gonna stay at this apartment forever. I mean,
Kyle's it as far as me living with significant others. After learning the things I've learned about both myself and the way that I am in relationships, I think he's the only person that could, like, tolerate me. Especially now that I'm just continuing to buy, like, house plants and shit. Now we're, like, completely financially untethered, so we can really go wild with apartment amenities and stuff.
I love that. Oh, I love that. God. I mean, we're just rambling at this point, but this new job, this teaching job, is the most money I've ever made in my life. So I'm doing dumb stuff.
You should.
I should be saving my money, because I'm about to move across the country again. I literally was like, I'm looking at my first, like, pay stub, and I'm like, I can pay rent and then some with this, and I was like, I'm gonna buy this $100 pair of shoes, I'm gonna buy some period underwear, and
yeah,
you know what? It's a life of luxury. It is a life.
I bought some perfume the other day. I was like, I haven't bought cosmetics for myself since before the pandemic. I was gonna hold my wrist out to you over FaceTime as if you could smell. I was like, hey Kyle, do you like my new perfume? It's Givenchy. And he was like, what's that?
Dumb bitch.
Can't talk to men about anything.
That's why I need to get out there. As much as I love the voice. Like, we need each other.
So badly. Me and Henry and Kyle today, we went to Wine World before we went to the park. And the three of us, Kyle wanted a red wine, Henry wanted a white wine, and I wanted a rosé. So we picked a two that would make everybody unhappy. I need someone here to vote on my side.
I would have voted with you. I love a rosé. Yeah.
It's summer. It's
bum bum bum
bum bum bum
bum bum
bum bum bum. That's my season peak,
yeah.
By the way.
Well, that's why I was thinking about it.
I think that well, I'll save it, but I think that was my favorite episode of the season.
Alright, well, I guess we're gonna get back into it. Hannah, what was your favorite episode of the season?
Oh, God. You know, a lot of laughs this season. I wish that I had kept my notes. I didn't. I took them all in the notes app, and then I would just erase them after every episode that we recorded. And I wish that I would have kept them for this, because I feel like a lot of the things that I wrote down would have been helpful now. But hindsight's 20/20. My favorite episode, or the one that I laughed the most at for sure, I think was the handbell one. Winston coming into his own on top of everything that was going on in that episode. You can't see me, but I'm doing the motion of him having multiple bells in each hand. The mastery of the instrument really solidified that pick for me.
I love that one. That one's, like, really memorable. Like, when I first watched this show, like, when it was on TV weekly, it was, like, I remember that episode specifically.
I remember that playing on TV. Like, it seems like that episode was on more than... Mm. I don't know. A lot of them are, but...
Yeah, you mean, like, reruns?
Yeah, I just feel like that one, revisiting this series for more or less the first time, I think that was the one that I had, like, was the most familiar with, you know? Yeah.
I don't know. I think my favorite is probably the Thanksgiving episode. Just because I love Paul. He's such a great character. And I love the whole thing where Jess is like, the turkey's name is Hank, and then they put it in the dryer. And there's a whole bit at the beginning with the children's play and the, like, the Halloween play that's all about death.
Yeah, what are the lyrics of that again?
I've seen it so many times, so I remember. They go, what's it all about? Is there any point? Do we start dying the minute we are born?
Oh, no. I knew it was something like, do we stop dying as soon as we're born? But I said, it's so specific.
So funny. Oh, my God. I love it. I love it a lot. But I do think that my favorite, like, moment in the whole... this whole season. Oh, God, I don't know. Okay, what's your favorite moment in the whole season?
My favorite moment. God, there's so many. Part of me, the intrusive thought part of me just said, say the threesome. But no, I think, just seeing Cece and Schmidt's relationship, I think my favorite moment of the season was when Winston found out about Schmidt and Cece, and he learned that they also had heard him singing Wicked the whole time, and he's just like, this doesn't make sense. You know, who we knew all three of those characters to be was really prominent at that moment, so I feel like that was my favorite. Although it was hard to say not, like, all of Nick's moments. I rewatched Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse the other day, and just reflected on how great of casting it was to have Jake Johnson as the burnout Peter Parker. And I went back to New Girl, and I was like, oh, this is such, he makes such great choices with this, like, one type that he gets cast in, and just over and over makes, like, these really memorable big choices. It was hard not to think of him as, like, the winner of the entire season, even though I think my favorite moment was still the Schmidt and Cece discovery.
Yeah. I think my winner for this season is Max Greenfield, is Schmidt, just, because, I mean, I don't know, I think only because I know how, like, the arc of Nick a little bit more, and I like him more in other seasons, so I'm saving my Jake Johnson win, but, like, Max Greenfield is so funny.
He takes the character from, like, this kind of generic douchebag to, like, a really lovable, quirky, idiosyncratic character, and that in and of itself is a big win. Kyle and I were talking about, like, what makes, like, after Friends / The Office, like, what makes certain sitcoms successful, like The Office, you know, wouldn't have been as successful mm-hmm. without Steve Carell, for example. And yeah, Zooey Deschanel is sort of the flagship, like, actress / character archetype of this TV show, but they, all three of these actors, make these roommate characters their own and develop them in such a way that, like, really contributes to, like, what I hope, like, is the longevity of this show. I know it runs for, like, what, like, 6 seasons?
I think 6, yeah.
Yeah, so it runs for a long time, and that's because these characters feel so true, like, so tactile, you know?
Yeah.
Max Greenfield especially, just, like, Schmidt in episode one and Schmidt in the last episode are just, like, complete different sides of the coin. It's delightful to see.
Yeah, I mean, that is true, kind of all of them. Like, they've grown. We've mentioned it so many times, like, the growth that these characters show, but, like, I would love to watch the pilot and then the finale of this season back-to-back and just, like, observe how much all of them have grown, because you're right. I mean, all of these actors, like, and all of these characters have been my favorite at one point or another during all six seasons, watching it so many times. yeah, it is kind of delightful.
Well, we've talked about in other episodes how hard it is to, like, pick a winner of the episode just because the ensemble is so strong.
Right. Like, they have such great chemistry. And they're all, like, still friends, which is something I love to, like, keep observing, is that, like, on each other's birthdays, they, like, post stuff for each other, and, like, Max Greenfield and Jake Johnson will, like, still do interviews together because they're, like, best friends, and it's just... It's really cute. I love
that. It's like the impression of, like, the bond you form with people you do, like, theater shows with, but it lasts for several years because you're just kind of doing those characters in a bunch of different situations. I don't know. I can imagine that would be a really binding experience.
Yeah. And especially one where you have to, like, I mean, like, you can't portray a friend group that's this close-knit unless you're, like, in it with those people. And
right.
Yeah. And also judging from, I mean, all of the work that we've seen from all of those actors, either before or since, like, you really get the impression that those characters are kind of close to each of them in some sort of way. So that's kind of nice, too, that it seems like they're all, like, obviously acting, but also being themselves to a certain extent, and just, like, I love that.
It honestly speaks to the casting, too, because at the time, like, other than Zooey Deschanel, everybody was kind of an unknown or mostly a television actor, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess we've done all this talk about the guest stars, but we've never actually talked about, like, the six billed actors of the cast. Maybe I'll do research on that at some point.
Yeah.
In case you're all dying to know about it. But at least my impression was that a lot of them were previously underutilized before this show, so it's cool that the casting agents recognize their chemistry and their potential within that.
Yeah. I mean, like I think Zooey Deschanel was, like, well, I mean, she's a producer, so, like, obviously she was, like, a big driving force, but, like, her and Damon Wayans Jr. were, like, the two that I think were recognizable, and then the other ones were not so much, and now they're huge, and also, like, making great shit. I told you that I just watched Promising Young Woman the other day, and, like, seeing Max Greenfield in that, and he's playing a character that's, like, it's literally just Schmidt, but also, like, very different from Schmidt, that I'm just, like, oh, I love observing this, like, what he can do with that tiny role to make it memorable, just a testament to, like, how good of a comedian he is.
You ever see the fifth season of American Horror Story?
I didn't. I stopped watching that show after, like, the first two seasons, I think.
Yeah, the first two seasons are... Well, the third one's good. After the first three seasons, you don't really... It's not great. But in the fifth season, Max Greenfield does make an appearance in a minor role, and it's very different, without spoiling anything, than the role he does in Promising Young Woman / New Girl. He's Kathy Bates' son, among other things.
Perfect.
That was the only other thing I'd seen him in other than New Girl, so I remember seeing that and being like, oh my god! If you're listening and you've seen American Horror Story Hotel, you know what I'm talking about.
Ooh, okay. Now I want to watch it. I've been kind of wanting to get back into that show because I'm kind of in a space where I want to watch, like, fun things.
Hotel was, like, fun to watch in, like, kind of a trash TV kind of way. Like, me and Julia watched that season together because we thought that Evan Peters' character was super hot. And he is. He's, like, a serial killer, but he's, like, got a mustache and talking in this weird, like, 20s affectation. So we were like, ooh, we'll watch this. And Gaga's in it, and she's a vampire. Like, more... I don't think she's a vampire. She's, like, more or less a vampire. I don't think they actually ever say what she is, but... It's hot. It's a bisexual paradise, frankly. but it's not good. Like, it's not like you're not gonna get anything from it like you would from like Twin Peaks or something like that. It's just like, oh, I'm just gonna watch these hot people do this terrible horror movie script like for 8 hours.
And like,
that's kind of what it is.
That's perfect. That's kind of how all of Ryan Murphy's stuff is, and I love it. Like, yeah. I would watch any of his shit because it's just like fun. Fun to watch.
The girl, oh god, who is she in the first season? Lily Robb. So in the first season of American Horror Story, she's the ghost wife of the original owner of the house with the curly blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
So her name's Lily Robb, and she's like a huge Shakespearean actress and been on a bunch of BBC stuff. But in the fifth season, she plays a fictional version of Eileen Wuornos, the serial killer from Florida.
Yeah.
And, like, that Charlize played in that one movie, Monster.
Mm-hmm.
And they got her, like, all teased out, and she just, like, looks super, like, weird and affecting. And it's just, it's that kind of stuff all season. I don't know.
I dig that.
Just great performances. Odd premise.
Yeah. Yeah,
but Max Greenfield is counted among those great performances. So
God, he's great. He's just great. I am convinced that he is one of the funniest people living, and he's a great dad. He's always like posting pictures with his child, like tutoring. I think he has a daughter. Sorry if he has a son. A little tipsy. So. But it's just, like, always, like, pictures of, like, online school, and it's very cute.
I hope that, kind of in the fray of everything, Promising Young Woman, like, doesn't get forgotten about. Because I did think it was a good movie. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would count it with, you know, some of the just good, average movies that, like, we've been watching from the 90s lately, you know? Like, it's just, I hope it's not something that gets swept under the rug as, like, being, like, too of the moment or anything. Because I really did think that movie was great, and the premise, and I wish we got to see more of that kind of storytelling from women, but...
Yeah, I had heard, I mean, now we're gonna go off on the Promising Young Woman tangent, but whatever. No outline, just vibes. I had a lot of friends who, like, had seen it before me and were like, I didn't like it. But I'm not going to tell you why. And, like, after watching it, I'm like, I kind of get it, but also I kind of don't get it. Like, it gave me, like, I think, like, the reason why people maybe didn't like it is just because, like, they're thinking too hard about it, and that's, like, a weird thing to say about a movie that's, like, deals with such a heavy topic, but, like, in the same way that, like, Heathers doesn't take place in reality, that movie... Promising Young Woman doesn't take place in reality. Like, it is a version of reality where people are emotionless about things that they shouldn't have emotions about, but also have extreme emotions about things that, like, make them still relatable to us. And so, like, of course her parents, like, she's a 30-year-old woman who lives at home. Like, that's not realistic at all. And, like, her home is pristine, and, like, her parents talk to her in this, like, very strange way that no one talks to anyone, but it seems like such a purposeful choice, and, like,
it's like you're watching, like, Eraserhead or something like that. You just, like, you know, just inherently that this is not in reality. Like,
yeah, and I think that people who are judging it harshly are like, oh, well, it's, you know, it's, she's too removed from the incident and things like that, and I'm like, sure, but this isn't reality. Like, it's a version of reality where the pharmacy, like, turns into neon lights for a 30-second dance number to, like, a Paris Hilton song. Like, it's not
Because that's the way that trauma colors your experience on, like, one level. But, I mean, I don't remember exactly when it was in the year that we watched this. It was before the Oscars, but it was, like... time after the movie had come out, But I remember, like, watching this movie and Kyle, like, looking at me and he'd be like, well, it was, like, right after the election. He was like, well, that, like, makes me feel really vindicated, like, after all of, like, the tumult of, like, the election and the Capitol riot and everything. Just, like, that, like, sort of facade of revenge, but you're not actually doing anything that's actually harming anybody until it harms you. I don't know. I think there was something in there that, like, really spoke to not only our experience just kind of watching, like, everything play out on the national stage last year, but also just, like, our experience as essential workers and everything. It just, like, it was a revenge fantasy that worked on more than one level, and I think that that's what really makes it, like, a lasting, like, that's what gives it a lasting impression in my memory.
Yeah.
Especially after the experience of the last year. I'll never forget him, like, looking at me after that movie, just like, that made me feel really good about the last year. And, like, nothing made me feel good about the last year. So, like, that's powerful that had that effect on him, you know? Like,
yeah. And I think, like, I know that, like, I know that other people's problem with it was, like, oh, like, she sort of is not a great person. Like, she harms these people in order to, like, get them to understand the trauma that, like, her friend went through and also that she went through as a result of her friend going through it. Because, like, I don't know about you, but, like, I've definitely been in situations where, like, a friend tells me, like, something that happened to them, or, like, something that happened to their relative, like, something that happened to someone they know, or to them, and I have to talk about it in therapy. Like, it hurts me to know that they're hurting, and so it's just, like, that rung true to me. But then I was also like, yeah, like, you're not supposed to think that she's doing the right thing. Like, she's hurting these people. And also, like, yeah, the whole, like, kind of in the way that it's like, oh, okay, she forgives the man, but, like, in the end, like, we have to watch her, oh, spoiler alert, we have to watch her die. Sorry, everybody. And, like, we have to watch the whole thing, and it's super long. But, like, I was also like, oh, I feel like this is making a commentary on, like, violence against women and the way that that's portrayed in, like, 70s rape revenge movies. And I don't know, I could go on a tangent about this forever, but no, I just, no, I thought it was brilliant.
Totally a thing. I more or less started writing something that it became something else a long time ago, but what it initially was like a revenge fantasy about the Sandy Hook thing and, like, violence against children. And when I started writing this thing, I reached out to one of my former professors who was a Shakespeare professor, and I asked her, I was like, hey, can you just send me, like, a bunch of stuff about, like, revenge tragedies and just, like, kind of what the general guidelines are for writing, like, a story about revenge. Kind of the first thing about the story of revenge is that you're not supposed, like, the act of revenge is inherently wrong. Like, you're not supposed to want to root for the person that's seeking vengeance, no matter how righteous that cause may be, because that's still perpetrating violence slash a crime slash whatever onto another party. Justice and revenge are, you know, we don't have to get into that conversation, but that being, like, the biggest thing, like, that was the biggest thing for me in watching this movie. It was a revenge tragedy, or revenge comedy, I guess, if you wanted to call it that, like, to make it a little bit more modern. But I read this tweet once that was like, I can't wait for this future of characters that never make any mistakes, because that seems to be all anybody wants to see anymore. It's like, no, I kind of prefer it when people in fiction are shitty people, because, you know, at the very least, hopefully it'll make people in real life a little bit better. You know, if people can see the Joker killing a bunch of people and it makes them feel better about being angsty but not killing people, then that's good, right? I don't know. This is getting into a weird territory, but, like,
I mean, I got thoughts about Joker that I won't go into it, now, because this is technically a New Girl podcast.
Yeah.
But I agree that, like, I don't know, like, there's something that it's so easy to see yourself in a flawed character. Like, I mean, like, even though I was, like, fully accepting that, like, that movie did not take place in reality at all, I was also like, yeah, low-key, like, if that happened to one of my close friends, like, I wouldn't do the same thing, but I would sure as hell think about it, or, like...
It's because that movie touches on a real specific, like, aspect of female friendship, which is, like, I will fucking kill anybody that, like, fucks you up like this, like... And that's, like, what we think about doing every time one of our friends tells us that they've been hurt by a man. Like, that's what we think about doing, like, on their behalf. Like, it's just, it touches on something that's really real. Like, you know? It, mm-hmm. And even though that's not necessarily how we would have carried that out, like, that's why it's fiction. That's why it's, like, being expressed this way by all of these people, you know? It's... We should make this a separate Promising Young Woman podcast, because I'm really vibrant with this conversation.
I'm letting us do it because Max Greenfield. Yeah. Because he's in featured it. Role. And he's fucking great. That was also my one friend, like, none of my friends except you liked that movie that I've talked to about it, except for one, my best friend from high school, Caroline. And after she watched it, she was like, the casting in this is incredible because it's all men that you love. Like, it's...
Dude, Bo Burnham.
Sam Richardson. Yeah, it's Bo Burnham. It's Max Greenfield. It's dudes that you're like, oh my god, they're so funny.
I trust
so
them.
Great.
I would trust him with my life. Yeah, right. Exactly.
And then it's like, it's also like women that you love. It's Laverne Cox. It's Carey Mulligan. And you're just like, oh.
I knew Caroline had taste.
Yeah, she's the best.
Allison Brie's the girl, the other girl in it, and I totally forgot she was in it.
She's so good. Oh, I love her.
I didn't ask the boys, come to think of it, what they thought about Promising Young Woman. I know Kyle liked it, of course, but I know just Henry was really into Pieces of a Woman, so I didn't want to step on that conversation.
He was pulling for Vanessa to win that Oscar.
He really did want, but I don't think Vanessa's stylist wanted her to win that Oscar based on how they sent her on that red carpet, but that's a conversation for a different podcast.
But she looked hot in the BAFTAs.
My alter ego does a couture podcast, just shit talks celebrities that don't cut it on the red carpet. That's my alter ego.
that can be this podcast.
This podcast.
Because I love celebrities, Hannah.
It's so, dude, no, it's so much fun. Nobody understands this. I guess Henry kind of does, but, like, nobody understands, like, how much fun it is to just see the way that these people interact with each other on such, like, such a unflinchingly public stage. Like, the arena that that celebrities live in is so unfathomable to me. It's so fun to, like, just watch the red carpet, watch people who've been married for years interact just under that lens, like, interviews, just it's all great. It all just helps you engage with the culture at large in such unexpected ways. You have no idea how many people I've bonded with talking about Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly just because I know, like, one or two things about that relationship. I just bonded with people over it. People love talking about this stuff. It's just such the easiest way to tap in.
Can we talk, like, favorite character moments all season? I think that's fun.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this, and for sure, I think, all right, top three Nick moments. Number three, him pouring beer into the cactus. Number two, him in the cockfight. And number one being, of course, shall I compare thee to a summer's day? No, a summer's day is not a bitch. Because who hasn't felt that?
Yeah, dude, that's my number one. That's my number one for sure.
It's like almost like one of the funniest moments of television I've ever seen. I was so caught off guard by that the first time I saw it. I had to, like, go back and get it again.
Summer's Day is not a bitch.
Are we going by character? Because those were just my favorite Nick moments. Those weren't my favorite. Okay, good.
Yeah, we're going by character. I'm trying to think of what my number three is. I got my top two.
Okay. He just had so... I think Schmidt had the best... I don't know who had the best one-liners. Nick had the most memorable moments, I think. Also, at the time of this recording, it's been like 4 weeks since we've recorded one of these episodes, so it's been kind of a while since I've seen the first part of this season, and of course, Ellie's seen this a lot more than I have, so I'm having a disclaimer when considering the rest of the characters' moments.
You know what? I'm only gonna go with my top two, because I can't think of a third. All the thirds that I'm thinking of are not from this season, so I'm not gonna say them. So my top two is my number two is when he says, it's Fancy Man, he goes into Russell's, honestly, that whole thing in Russell's office is my number three, especially when he takes the sweater, okay? My number two, when he says, I came in here and it smelled like Shakespeare, if Shakespeare were a damn cowboy.
He's like holding the decoy duck and he's like, Jess, I think I want to kill you because I respect you.
I think he's I understand hunting. And my number one is, shall I compare thee to a summer's day? No, a summer's day is not a bitch.
What the fuck is funnier than that? Who hasn't felt that like in their lives?
I feel that every day. It's gonna be 108 here this weekend.
Oh my god. That's gotta be like a record. I was gonna say, I think the hottest it got when I was in Seattle three years ago was 85 degrees one day. One day.
It's not gonna be that hot in Seattle. Apparently we're further south.
Like, how much farther? Because, like, it can't be that much, right? I don't know. It's like a state away.
Yeah, it's like 3 hours south.
Distance in the West is so different than it is in the Midwest and the East where we're from. Like, a state away is a way bigger deal in other parts of the country.
Yep. Anyway.
Sorry.
top three Winston.
Oh my god. Honestly, the first thing that came to mind was, there's a crescent moon outside.
I'm gonna live up there one day.
I'm gonna live up there one day. She's like, what? Other than the obvious choice of the handbell episode. Or when the kid, I guess this is more the kid's moment than Winston's, but when he's like, Winston's out here smoking weed, and the mom kicks him out, and he's like, what the fuck, kid? Like, he doesn't say that, but like, that's the tone of the scene. And the kid does it so he can live his dream. I think those are my three moments. I don't know that they're in any specific order.
Yeah, well, my number one Winston moment is... when he's talking about Eye of the Tiger in the Bells episode, he's like, it's so cool, it ended the Cold War.
Yeah, that's great. what a great joke. Oh wait, we didn't talk about Theodore K. Mullins in our Tom Winston moments.
How could we forget?
It's like, we shaved each other's backs. And that's when they chose to get up and leave.
Yeah, honestly, I think it goes number one, Eye of the Tiger, number two, Theodore K. Mullins.
For sure.
And number three, Crescent Moon.
Also, him singing Popular, he was like, Popular, lar, la. He, like, knew it so well. He had, like, all the syncopated rhythms stepped out, like he said. Oh, that gets me every time.
I love that because, like, we all know that guy, you know? Like, because I love that Winston is, like... Well, I don't know. I guess this is kind of, like, true of all of them, but, like, especially of Winston. It's, like, I feel like every bisexual girl that I know has, like, a couple straight male friends that fall into the archetype of, like, either Schmidt, where they're, like, a douche with a heart of gold, or, like, they're, like... Winston, who's, like, an athlete that's, like, secretly a weirdo. and, or both, honestly, both. And, both. Like, I just love how specific that is, that it's, like, Winston, you're introduced to him, he's kind of the straight man, he's a basketball player, he's super competitive, but then as you get to know him more and more, you're just like, oh, this guy's weird as hell, and he knows all the words to Wicked.
Those are the best people.
I had a friend in high school who was on the football team, and, like, I am not the type of person who's friends with people on the football team, so it was weird. But it was, like, because he was like that. Like, he was like, oh, yeah, like, I listened to Glee before the game to, like, calm me down. I was like, you're weird. You're my friend.
There was always that kid, that, like, jock that would join theater, and he'd be, like the kid, the guy at our school, joined and played the wizard in Once Upon a Mattress, which nobody knows that show, but he was just, like, weird as fuck the whole time. Like, everyone was just super confused, but vibing with it. Like, I feel like there was always that, like, not everyone can resist the call of Sweet Lady Theater.
And honestly, it makes theater more fun. Because, it, like, does. It's full of, like, the same type of people. So it's fun when you get a little mix up and then you get to, like, make an unlikely friend. That was always fun.
Honestly, like, when I think about, like, the history of theater and just, it's so much more fun when it's, like, a group of people from, like a whole bunch of different backgrounds coming together to, like, put something on than it is for a bunch of professionals. I don't know. Sometimes that's more interesting. Just yeah. To be part of, maybe. I don't know.
I agree. Or, like, my favorite thing is making, like friends who aren't actors act, just to, like, see yeah. what they'll do. Like, people who are, like, stage managers and being like, alright, be in this sketch with me. And it's just, yeah. like... I love that kind of stuff. That's really entertaining.
Do you remember Muiwa, who played Polonius in Hamlet? Yeah, he's like a doctor now, but he was like the best fucking part of this entire production of Hamlet that we were in, honestly. Like, not, like, an actor aspiring, but, like, an actor all the same. Like, that's the best kind of performance. I don't know.
God, he had the best comedic timing. It's just,
oh, my God. Some people just know what's funny.
Muiwa, if you're listening, we miss you.
We love you.
He's not listening. He's not. Too good for us.
It's okay.
Okay, top three CC.
Number three is him doing all the cheese puns to seduce her, and it, like, works. Number two is, I don't know what, like, a number two would be. My number one, though, is when she was like, oh, it's the hand that it was in, that was inside Elmo, Jess. I had to give it a try. That's my number one CC moment. Or when he was like, I can't remember if it was her or Schmidt that said, she was like, well, what are we supposed to do now? And she was just like, just go in the back of the car when they were wondering how to get out of the situation before Winston discovered them in the back of the car. I don't, her length to keep her relationship a secret with Schmidt. Like, when she made him sit in the car, that was great.
Yeah, gotta love that.
Oof. Or all her model friends. I'll count that as a CC moment. Sorry, I'm taking all of them.
Go.
That's racist, Kyle. I don't remember what it was that Kyle said, but her off-screen response. Alright, that's my number two. I had to talk through it, sorry. I destroyed so many moments. What about your top three CC moments?
So, my favorite CC moments, in no particular order, I love her and Schmidt at the home with her grandma.
Yeah, oh man, I forgot about that.
I love that. I love her and Jess and Sadie when they're talking shit about Julia. And Cece's like, where is that bitch? Bring me your ribbon hat. I'm gonna put it on. I love that.
And she wears it the rest of the episode, like a loyal friend.
She does. And I also love when she's talking to Jess about Russell.
Yeah, that's just, like, such a she's just so genuinely, like, about, like, her only agenda is Jess's happiness. And even if, she's not just telling Jess, like, what she wants to hear. She's, like, asking her the tough questions because she knows, like, you know, not necessarily what she needs, but she knows how to recognize when she's not getting it. So, this is it's a great moment of friendship. You don't really see that a ton.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, I know I joked about this before, but now it's real. Favorite Joe Napoli?
Oh, all of them. Where he's like, somebody makes me feel like a jackass. Like, Bill Moynihan makes me feel like a jackass. Where he's like, where he figures out that Winston dipped his balls into his shake, and he's like laughing. He's like, let's go do it to Kareem. And then him and Kareem are just passing the shake back and forth to each other on air. what's not to love about Joe Napoli, frankly?
My two favorites are when Winston goes and picks him up, and Winston's like, I love your house, and Joe Napoli's like, it's not my house, run. Yeah. And then when they're driving and Joe Napoli's like, yard sale.
Specifically it. Because I've literally lived that experience multiple times of somebody just being like, yard sale.
There was a yard sale recently, couple blocks from my house or my apartment. And I was late to work one day, and I saw the sign for yard sale, and I was thinking about you. I was like, dude, I kind of feel like I should become the yard sale friend. Already late for your work, but should I go to this yard sale? And I decided not to, but
nah.
I don't work there
anymore. You would have felt drawn to it if there was anything worth buying there.
Oof. That's deep.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's just straight chaotic.
Favorite Jess moment.
Okay, I've been trying to think about this as we've been having this conversation, which has been difficult because I am pretty drunk. I don't know, there's so much to love about, I think number three is her original, like, shot at having a relationship with Paul. And she's like, her dirty talk is like basically just sounding like a 30s like reporter. She's like, oh well. I don't even remember what she says. I just remember that's how she said it, and it's I don't know. That's my number three.
I love that.
You say you're number three now, so I have time to think of two and one.
Okay, I'm just gonna kind of make shit up as I go along. My number three is the Christmas episode when Nick is like, we gotta turn around so we can go to Candy Cane Lane so that we can turn on all the lights for Jess. And just, like, the way that she's looking at all of them while they're yelling to, like, turn on the lights. I'm really sentimental, I guess, right now, because I'm drunk, but,
No, it's okay. it's a beautiful moment.
I watched that episode on Netflix Party with Jillian, who is my other best friend, aside from you, on Christmas Eve, and I don't know, and, like, just, like, it, I don't know, that episode means a lot to me, and so that moment, like, always makes me cry. Yeah.
Well, they care about her, and she, like, has, like, confirmation of that, I guess, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
Love it so much. Okay, what's your number two?
Okay, I thought of my number one, I just forgot my number two, because I'm an idiot. Oh, what did I say for number three? Her dirty talk with Paul?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my number two is her whole bit with the talking stick and Nick, and he breaks it in half, and she just takes a smaller, like, more dirty one out of her bag, and she's like, that's not how we use our words, and hands it to him again. I don't remember what she says, but
she says, I have a travel size.
Yeah. And then later in the episode, Winston and Schmidt are like, they're like passing the stick back and forth. They're like, I feel that Nick is not acknowledging our feelings. Just her immediate effect on them is, that's my number two.
My number one and number two are from the same episode, which was also my favorite episode. So get ready, listeners. My yes. number two is when she's like, the turkey's name is Hank. Hanksgiving. And we're gonna eat him. Because Schmidt's like, oh, you invited Paul over? Be honest, is the turkey named Paul? She's like, no, the turkey's name is Hank.
It's Hanksgiving.
Okay, what's your number one?
My number one is when she thinks that Nick has to see her naked or vice versa to even the score, and Nick finally gets this girl into his bedroom, and she's just under the bed and is like crawling away. Like that entire like absolute farcical exchange is my number one moment of her for the season. I couldn't fucking imagine a worse situation to be in than that. Like,
okay, my number one is when she is outside of the door of the lady who ends up dead, her apartment, with Nick, and she's like, I want to do it with him big time. I want to do all the ways, and she lists them all, and she's like, and give me that hat.
I've done that, but it was more like a take that. Please take my hat.
Okay, favorite, top three Schmidt.
Oh god, there's so many. His montage where he's like, have you seen my dress moccasins? Like,
that's your number three?
Where are my driving moccasins? Have you seen my good pea cones? I don't know.
That's my number one.
I was gonna say, wait a minute, that there's nothing that's funnier than that. So, honorable
mentions. Have you seen my other timepiece?
Yeah. Everything he says, like, to and about Cece, pretty much. Where he's like, she's like trying to, like, they finally admit they like each other in the hospital with his broken penis. And he's like, get out. And she's like, oh, don't bend over for the, are you insane? Call a nurse. Call a male nurse. Honestly, I was sad to see the broken penis go. Maybe I'm immature, but I could have laughed at that a little longer.
me too. Oh, another Schmidt moment. This is probably my number three, but where he's like, 29? Don't tell anyone I just did that.
29?
I got 6 years, but when I turn 29, I'm going to be doing that the whole night, so. You'll be
six
there.
6 years. I will. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Okay, who was your favorite guest star the whole season?
Lizzie Kaplan. I thought she did the best job, I think. She, like, made the most sense in the universe and just... I liked her character. Ultimately, she wasn't right for Nick, of course, but I thought Julia was a good foil to Jess, and I thought that actress did a really nice job. Oh, other than Joe Napoli, of course.
Well, Joe Napoli doesn't count. He's one of the main cast in our minds.
He's top billed. Yeah, you're right. Wouldn't disparage him with a guest star moniker.
I agree that it's Lizzie Kaplan, but I do have to give a big shout to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh, God, of course. Of course, for doing my absolute favorite thing of basketball players as themselves. I can't wait to see LeBron James in the upcoming Space Jam. I don't think it's going to be that good, but LeBron James was so good in Trainwreck that, like, I'll go see Space Jam. He made choices.
Well, like, the first Space Jam with Michael Jordan, like, that was, like, my brother and I's favorite movie as a kid. Like, you don't understand really? How many times we watched Space Jam. We were a basketball family, like, for sure.
That is honestly shocking to me. I did not know that about you.
I mean, I'm not, like, I wouldn't consider myself, like, someone who knows a lot about basketball, but, like, my brother played basketball. I played basketball. You come
from a basketball family. Like, yeah, like, holy shit, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we love basketball.
My mom desperately threw her three children at all manner of sports, hoping that one would stick. Luckily, my brother ended up being pretty athletic, but me and my sister, we just went through the motions. We were not good.
Yeah, my brother played, like, several sports in high school, but, like, I mean, no offense to him, like, I know he listens to this, like, he's gonna be like, what? But, like, my brother went to, like, a very small private high school, and, like, I don't think that he would have played sports if he went to the high school that I went to, which was, like, a large public high school. Like, our high school experiences were polar opposite in terms of, like, the actual school. So I think that he probably would not have played sports if it wasn't, like, a thing. Like, at his school, everyone played varsity everything, right? Because there were like 50 kids in his class.
I've been at like smaller Christian schools, like, I know how easy you just like have to, because like otherwise there's no team, you know?
Right, it was like he played like baseball, basketball, and soccer, and did theater, and like if I had tried to do that at my school, like I would never have been able to do it. Because
dude, I kept this planner for this reason, and it's because I did show choir, which at the time was, like, an out-of-school activity, theater, and cross-country all in the same, like, semester, and just, like, my fucking agenda from this period of my life when I was, like, fucking 16 years old is absolutely unbelievable. I can't believe that, like, I was committed to that many things. Just, like, on top of everything else, like, for school and yearbook and fucking the newspaper and shit like that, like, just
I could never do it now. I get home from one day with the children, and like yesterday I fell asleep at 6 p.m
yeah. I if I have to get up before 8 a.m I'm like a mess for the rest of the day. I used to get up at 5 in the morning and shower and blow dry my hair before school. What the fuck?
No, today
what happened to me?
Today I almost yelled at my children because I thought they spilled my energy drink. Like, that's where we are. They didn't. But a very kind child had just moved it from the chair that she wanted to sit on to the counter.
But they could have. That's the important thing.
But they
thing.
Could have, and I was could like, have. Was there a drink on that chair before you sat on it? And she was like, yeah, it's right there. I was like, my God. Okay. So I don't know.
It's my youth juice.
I don't know if I could get through this day if you had spilled that.
Yeah. God, I remember. If there hadn't been a coffee shop literally in the theater that I worked at in Seattle, I don't know, like, what. I would have had to plan a lot more ahead than I did. They would just send me, like, my boss would just send me in the middle of the shift. She'd like, go to the lobby and get us some Americanos. I'd be like, okay. You don't have to ask me twice.
That's what I kind of loved about, like, Zoom work and, like, working from home. And honestly, working at a grocery store, too, because, like, I was an essential. I had two jobs through most of the pandemic, which was, like, Zoom theater and also working in a grocery store. So, like, anytime I needed coffee, I could either, like, be on Zoom on my phone and also be in line at Starbucks, or, like, just go to the coffee aisle and, like, buy a freaking can of coffee. But, like, now that I'm in a situation where I can't do that, I'm like, I gotta stock up all day. Like, I got, like, a yerba and, like, a V8 energy, and I got a coffee in the morning. Like, it's all in my little lunchbox. It's rough.
Dude, those yerbas are insane. That got me through the pandemic. That fucking, what is it, like, 160 milligrams of caffeine in a can? Like, oh my God. I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for those things.
My doctor told me to stop drinking them.
Yeah.
But has that stopped me?
But I didn't.
No, it has not.
My mom tells me I have a caffeine intolerance. It makes me puke. Hasn't stopped me.
Yeah, I do too. I get nauseous if I even have like a green tea, if I haven't like eaten enough. But yeah. Doesn't stop me.
It's like exacerbated by the medication I'm on, which makes me have to be more mindful. But I guess it's making me be healthier, which is a good thing.
Yeah. I guess, wait, should we wrap up?
Oh, yeah, probably. any closing, it didn't derail. We had some valid points all the way through.
Yeah, we had great points. Listeners know that we've had some fun with season one, and we had a lot of fun with the finale. So, thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you so much. This was definitely a project that was important to us for a lot of reasons, and we're excited to return for season two. Especially, this is totally new territory for me. I haven't seen any new girl past season one before, so we're going into new waters.
New waters.
Uncharted waters.
this has been Not Another New Girl podcast. The music by Hannah Scambalone, editing by Ellie Kniff. Bye.
See you next time.